through the decades, through the centuries.
So you guys have actually played this to a few European audiences as well, right?
Yeah, we've completed, I think, 7 European tours now.
Really?
So, yeah, mm-hmm. Three of them in Spain.
How's the reception of a washboard-fueled band in Spain?
Oh, they love it. I mean, the response is different everywhere you go. Spain has been a great audience for us because they have a great appreciation for a lot of soul and R&B and funk and stuff like that, and it's really popular right now over there. So there's a market for us there, and we've been going over, and Spain's been a great place. People love to party there, and they like to stay out late, so we actually get to meet people after the shows because people don't just go home and got to wake up the next morning. They still wake up the next morning, but, we get to hang a little bit and meet some folks. So Spain's been great for us, but we love playing everywhere. I mean, it's not that different from New Orleans, actually, where we just were. So,
any place where they just don't seem to get it?
No, we make sure they get it. There's nothing not to get. It's just a good time. People do appreciate the music in their own way, of course.
You guys are actually doing 2 concerts, but I think one of them's already sold out. Friday night at 8, you're in Hope Hall here in Juneau, and that'll be a sit-down concert. And then you're the band for the Blues Cruise, which is a little boat trip that got built into the Juneau Jazz and Classics a few years back when it was just getting started, and it takes folks out to out in our beautiful waters around here while you guys serenade them with your unique music. So, but I think all the chairs all the chairs are sold out on the Blues Cruise. So I think advertising it anymore is just going to make Juneau cry because they won't.
No chairs. No chairs necessary for our music.
Yeah. So they can stand up and stomp the deck if they want to.
Yeah.
So National Blues Foundation nominated you for you guys for Best New Artist.
That was about 4 years ago now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the last time you guys won the Express Readers Poll Award out of the East Bay Express is in 2011, right?
Yeah, that was last year. Yeah, we won 5 awards there.
Outstanding.
That year. Yeah.
What kind of competition are you up against?
All kinds. All kinds of different bands. Because we won in a lot of different categories. So there was a lot of different groups. Some of them were, kind of famous worldwide by now. So, yeah, we were up. There's a lot of music in the Bay Area. A lot of great music of different varieties. R&B bands, and rock bands. We didn't compete in, genre sections, really. It wasn't like best R&B band or best soul band or something like that. It was just the best local. We won best local band, I think, best local album, best genre mixing band, and then we won a couple awards, best most multi-talented artist. I took home that award. So we won a bunch of different awards for that time around, and but now we're taking aim on the bigger market. We're taking aim on the United States this time around.
What's the plan?
With the next 2 records.
Oh, okay.
Just to play as many festivals and places as we can, get as many people to hear us, and, spread our sound around.
Oh, well,
we've been touring a lot. We hit the East Coast 3 times already this year, and we're just in New Orleans for Jazz Fest, kind of playing for all the music lovers that go down there for Jazz Fest every year, and now we're coming up to Alaska, so we're just going there everywhere we can.
We're a small market, but we're mighty.
Our music.
We're a small market, but small, we're mighty fans, I'll tell you.
Well, that's like us. We're small, but mighty. That's been our motto. That's what I always say to the crowd. When we got a small crowd, I say we're small but mighty, and the band is. That's kind of been our whole thing from the beginning. Is we're an independent band. We don't have a label. We just do everything grassroots style, and it's small but mighty, and that's what it's all about, reaching people one crowd at a time and giving people a good experience, making people forget about their whatever's going on in their life for a second and just letting them loose and, feeling the love of the music.
So after New Orleans, I hope you guys got raincoats with you.
I brought a jacket. I saw the We don't have rain in California.
I didn't think you did. So I'll tell you what, I'll make sure that the committee that comes to meet you with umbrellas and raincoats, because we've got our forecast is for rain for the next 4 days. So
We did notice that.
Yeah, we live in a rainforest here, so it's not an uncommon circumstance. So sometimes it gets bad enough that you need swim fins and a rubber suit, but that's very seldom. So anyway. You guys will like it, I'm sure, and I'm sure the crowd will like you as well. It sounds like a really fun organization. Let's go over the time one more time, because I think there's still tickets on sale in town. You guys are Friday night. The concert starts at 8 o'clock. It's in Hope Hall, plenty of seating, so should still be able to get in. And the band is Lesh Wozinski, trumpeter and vocalist, and the sax player is Johnny Bones. Ben Malamut's the drummer. And let's see, Doug Stewart's sitting in on bass, and Charlie Hickox is the keyboardist. So
that's correct.
Welcome to Juneau, almost. You guys are waiting in the docks to get aboard the airplane, and we'll see you this evening. You'll be out at the airport, and then the concert tomorrow night.
Yep, that's right. Thanks so much for bringing me on the show, and we look forward to bringing the good times to Juneau.
Thank you so much for dropping in on us.
All right. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 10th of May, 2012. It's the birthday of Bono, born in Dublin, 1960. His name, Paul Hewson, the lead singer of U2, who writes almost all of the lyrics of the band's songs. It's the birthday of Belle Kaufman, born 1911 in Berlin, grew up in Odessa and Kiev, moved to New York. She's the granddaughter of the writer Sholem Aleichem. She taught in the New York public schools for 20 years and turned her career into a novel called Up the Down Staircase. 2 years ago, when she was 99, Hunter College hired her to teach a course on Jewish humor. It's the birthday of Susan Laurie Parks, born in Fort Knox, Kentucky, 1963. 10 years ago, she became the first African-American playwright to win the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, her play Top Dog, Underdog. Last year, she staged a show, part performance art, part writing project, called Watch Me Work, in which she sat working at a typewriter, and the audience was invited to watch her. And she wrote a new adaptation of George Gershwin's opera, Porgy and Bess, which opened on Broadway this past January. She's working on a musical about Ray Charles called Unchain My Heart. It's the birthday of John Ronson, born Cardiff, Wales, 1967, best known for his nonfiction book, The Men Who Stare at Goats, about a secret New Age movement within the U.S. military that began in the late 70s, the Army interested in the military applications of the paranormal, the idea that it would be possible to do spying through thought, using thought as a weapon. John Ronson's most recent book, The Psychopath Test, A Journey Through the Madness Industry. It was on this day, 1869, the Transcontinental Railroad was completed. The project had been discussed since the 1830s, but people couldn't decide on the best route. Some people wanted to do a central route through Wyoming and Nebraska, others a southern route through Texas, avoiding the Rocky Mountains. But after Texas allied itself with the Confederacy in the Civil War, the central route won out. Abraham Lincoln made it one of his big goals in his presidency. He signed legislation to construct the line in July 1862. Two companies, Central Pacific building from west to east, and Union Pacific from east to west. There were scandals in the building of the Transcontinental Railroad, corruption. The route went through Indian lands in violation of treaties, and the arrival of the railroad made it possible for professional hunters to slaughter buffalo. But nonetheless, it was completed on this day, 1869, at Promontory Point in Utah, and the journey from New York to Sacramento, which had taken nearly 6 months, now took about 1 week. Here's a poem for today by William Stafford, Love in the Country. We live like this, no one but some of the owls awake, and of them only near ones really awake. In the rain yesterday, puddles on the walk to the barn sounded their quick little drinks. The edge of the haymow, all soaked in moonlight, dreams out there like silver music. Are there farms like this, where no one likes to live, and the sky going everywhere? While the earth breaks the soft horizon eastward, we study how to deserve what has already been given us. A poem by William Stafford, Love in the Country, from Stories That Could Be True, published by Harper & Row Publishers, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Sandy Williams is here with me to talk about the annual plant sale, which the garden clubs handle here in Juneau. Sandy, when is it?
The plant sale is Saturday, and it's at Carr's parking lot, as it has been for the last number of years, 9 o'clock in the morning, and it's a lot of people are there at 9 o'clock. We'll be waiting for you. We have the plant sale is put on by what we call four stakeholders, the Master Gardeners, the Community Garden, the Juneau Garden Club, and the 4-H group.
Ah.
And this year the Community Garden's in charge of it, and I'm sort of heading up the logistics of it. But we'll be there. We have some commercial vendors that are there, and also we have a number of nonprofits that are there. One thing I just might pass on is a lot of the plants you're going to see there are what we call pass-along plants, came down from mother or grandmother or whatever. But these are plants that will grow here. I doubt you will find a plant in that plant sale that won't do well in Juneau because they've been grown here before, unlike some plants that you might get at other commercial operations.
But, okay. Time again is...
9 o'clock.
And you need to be there right on the dot because stuff goes just wham.
It does. We will have a lot of plants, and a plant sale will go up until 12 o'clock or beyond. But we hope to see you folks there, rain or shine, on Saturday. This Saturday,
Carr's parking lot, 9 o'clock in the morning until the last plant is gone. Last plant standing. Thank you so much, Sandy.
You bet.
So step out and get the plants tomorrow. It's about... actually Saturday, not tomorrow. It's about 22 minutes after the hour of 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. This is Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore hosting here. And Cheryl Levitt-Snyder has joined me here in the studio to talk to us about the upcoming radio auction for KTOO, an important event.
Yes, thanks, Pat, for letting me come in. I know we've got a very full agenda here on a Juneau Afternoon today. But I did want to take just a moment to talk about our upcoming radio auction on Saturday. This is an event that we actually do every year. We do two auctions a year, and every spring we have different offerings than what we have in the fall, and it's just a really fun, exciting, great day of radio. This year we're starting the auction a little bit earlier than normal. We're going to start at 8 a.m. and go until 1 p.m. Then we're going to take a little intermission from the auction, and at 3 p.m. we'll go back on the air until 6 p.m. and finish up the rest of the auctioneering at that time. So we do invite you, of course, to listen all day long on the radio. You can tune into either K2 News or KRNN. We'll be simulcasting it, or you can just come on by the station. That's also always really super fun. We do get a number of people who come in and just bid right from the floor, and it gives them an opportunity to really see a lot of the tangible items in person. If that doesn't work for you, though, we do have the entire auction catalog up on the website. You can go to k2news.org, check it out, and over the next day, we're going to be getting photos up of all of the items. So, you know, there's a lot of beautiful jewelry and some great art, and so you can take a look at all of them and decide how much you want to bid.
I think the bid catalog also came out in the newspaper the other day, and it's probably on the stands as part of Capital City Weekly as well.
Yes, definitely. But we also, so if you have that, that's great. You can follow along all day long on that catalog. But we are still getting more donations coming in, so the most up-to-date catalog is the one that's online. And again, you get the advantage of having the photos accompanying the descriptions. Really exciting talking about items that just came in. We just got a donation from Bill Glued. It's a brand new pair of skis still in their package. That's going to be one of the biggest items that we auction off at the top of the 6 o'clock hour. But some other great ones you might want to consider this year. We have a week-long trip to Mexico. We're going to be auctioning off between 5 to 6. There's a really great trip out to Funter Bay, staying in someone's home out there, and that looks to be just absolutely fabulous. There's also a lot of flight seeing tours, kayak trips, all sorts of kind of the local excursions that you can do around here, some of the ice climbing. So we've got all of those items available, and then, of course, there's a lot of food items. Someone dropped off 3 dozen truffles today and gave us a couple to sample, so we can tell you that they're really fabulous.
I didn't get a sample.
You got here a little too late. I tell you, they were put out. They were gone in about 35 seconds. but there's
I
also going to
come in earlier after this.
Come in earlier, yep. There'll be some fresh homemade pies available that day, gift certificates for restaurants. As I already said, a whole lot of great art. We have over 200 items in this catalog, so a great way to get gifts for Mother's Day, and also just some really trips for the really great trips for the summer. So we encourage you to make your bids, listen all day long, and if you want to do pre-bids, that's highly encouraged. You can do so from our website. You can just go to the comments section on our website and make your pre-bid there, or just come in person, and we'll help you get that
just
taken care
Google
of.
Google KTOO, and it pops right up.
Yep, K2 yeah. News, yep.
Okay. I saw an email, I think, from you earlier this week. You were still looking for a couple, three people to volunteer to accept the bids. Are there still slots open that you need people to volunteer?
Amazingly, we've had a ton of people come out of the woodwork in the last day, so we are all set with volunteers. But if you are really hoping you could get in on that, give me a call, and I'm sure I can find
you a
job.
You can find a way. Yeah,
so just call me at the station on the main station line.
Good, Cheryl. One more time, the broadcast times are?
Starting at 8 a.m. Saturday morning on K2 News and KRNN, running until 1 p.m., then we'll have regular programming from 1 to 3, and then we'll come back at 3 o'clock and go until 6 p.m. on Saturday evening.
Wonderful. Thanks for turning us on to the big event.
Okay, thanks so much, Pat.
The Juneau World Affairs Council presents Edward Chow Thursday, May 10th, 5 p.m. at K2. Mr. Chow has advised U.S. and foreign governments on oil and gas matters after spending 20 years at Chevron. His topic, the shifting international petroleum landscape, made possible with support from Northrim Bank, GCI, the Brady Family Trust. That's this Thursday, 5 p.m., the K2 TV studio. Admission is free. More details at jwac.org.
Edward Chow will be with us in a few moments. Right now, we're with another guest here on KTO's Juneau Afternoon. John Logan's here with me to talk very briefly about Community Cleanup Day, which is Saturday. John, how can people take part in this event?
Well, what we're going to do on Saturday is it's our annual cleanup day, of course. And from 8 in the morning till 10 in the morning, our 8 bag sites are going to be open. And what people do that want to clean up in public areas is they're going to go to these bag sites and pick up some trash bags and some recycle bags, and they're going to head out to the public areas and clean up for an hour or two or however long they want, and then tie the bags up and set them on the side of the road by 2 p.m. And then after that, we have about 20 volunteer contractors that are come around and pick up the bags and take them to the landfill, and Waste Management accepts all that litter for free.
So how does someone find a bag site?
The bag sites are, there's one at Douglas Fire Hall, at A&P Foodland Shopping Center, Western Auto, Lyles and Jensen's Home Furnishings, Super Bear, Duck Creek Market, and the UAS Bookstore at Auk Bay. And a new site this year is out the road at Lynn Canal Fire Hall.
If somebody didn't get that list, is there a website they can go to find the website?
Litterfree.org, and there's an ad in Today's Empire that lists them all.
Okay, John.
And the phone number they can call is 789-3894.
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Pat.
28 minutes almost after 3 o'clock. My next guest is a speaker coming to town to address the Juneau World Affairs Council, and that address will be this evening here in the KTOO studios. And accompanying him down to the studio today is Jim Clark. Good afternoon, Jim.
Hi, and thank you very much for inviting us, Pat. The Juneau World Affairs Council is just delighted tonight to have Ed Chow, who is a teacher and a consultant and a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, D.C. It's free to the public. We're a nonprofit organization. I invite everybody to come to the KTOO TV studio tonight to hear Mr. Chow.
So, welcome to Juno, Mr. Chow.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and pleasure to be here.
So, you did, for the last, I guess, 30 years, you've been involved with the oil industry. And the oil industry in the United States has a critical role but a bad reputation. So, how have you juggled those two facts in your career?
Well, luckily or not, for myself, most of my work is international. So I haven't had to handle some of the domestic government public relations challenges of the industry has had. But it is an interesting phenomenon that this is in some ways both a critical industry and one that's much criticized, precisely perhaps because it affects people's lives so intimately. I would have to say that some of the criticism is probably well deserved, but you know, we live in a system where people are free to operate in the marketplace and pick and choose what they would like to do, and the oil companies need to be more forthcoming in the information that they provide to the public that they hope to serve, and there's a lot of improvement in that area that can be made.
The structure of the oil industry on the American scene is of corporations. In the international scene, it's an oligopoly and controlled very largely by a cartel. Has your work gone into that cartel to any great degree?
It has. It's a cartel, but more importantly, perhaps, it is natural resources controlled by governments. As you know probably better than most people in this country here in Alaska, that the resource owner is often the state or the federal government rather than private landowners, which we have more in the lower 48. But it is true around the world that the natural resource, the mineral rights subsoil, belongs to the sovereign or to the state, rather than to the people. And so often these resources are held by state enterprises, reporting or being responsible to the government rather than to private owners. So that's one of the reasons why there is this big difference in the control of the resources. The other, of course, is the distribution of oil and gas reserves around the world, so heavily concentrated in certain countries, particularly in the Persian Gulf and particularly among OPEC countries. So the nature of the international industry is a lot less free-flowing than it would be domestically here.
The international nature of America's oil supply is kind of, for most of us, it seems like a kind of a puzzle that we watch our government try to figure out how to balance a kind of a sense that what the American people want is energy independence, but that appears, at least from the history, to be an impossible thing for us to do because of the demand for petrochemical substances and stuff like that. How does that, and I guess my question is, how does that play out in the work that you have done, and do you have any ideas of how the government of the United States can balance those two kind of conflicting ideas that we should supply all of our own oil, but we can't?
I think energy independence is often a misnomer and often a term that's abused and misused by politicians from both sides of the aisle. It's hard for me to imagine a situation where the United States is so self-sufficient, particularly in oil, that it won't be affected by the international marketplace. It is a global market. It's a commodity that's traded around the world. Just because Norwegians are oil exporters don't mean that they are not affected when oil prices go up as a result of Rita and Katrina a few years ago, for example. So it's, you know, we can't disconnect ourselves from the global energy marketplace, in my mind. The second and perhaps more pertinent point is that we are a global power with global responsibilities, even if we're not impacted directly as negatively as we might be because we're producing more domestic oil and gas. Our trading partners and our allies would be affected, whether it's Europe or Japan. So I can't imagine the situation where the United States will ignore what's going on in the Middle East or elsewhere where the world depends on for its vital oil and gas supplies. We are a global power with global responsibilities. Now, it might make it a tougher political case to make to the American people as to why we should commit our blood and treasure for the world. But this is the position we have found ourselves for a long, long time now. And even if we were to become more self-sufficient in oil and gas, to me, that doesn't change our global responsibilities very much.
Hmm. Alaska is at one point in our history we were referred to as the only American oil barony in the world, but I think we've come to a kind of state of almost conflict between us and the large holders of the leases on our pipelines. We are stalled on the construction of a gas pipeline. And we've been stalled by the fact that, I mean, we've been stalled to such extent that I think now the market that we had when the first questions or when the first ideas arose, that market seems to have dissipated now because of production of natural gas in the lower 48. We tend to think of the lower 48 as our market. I'm not sure if that's possible because oil gets mixed up and goes to every place in the world. But this last legislative session in Alaska saw an almost nose-to-nose conflict between our governor and the legislature that never did really resolve about changing the oil tax structure in the state of Alaska. Did you follow that? I'm sure you did.
I not so much.
Oh, okay.
This is my first visit to Alaska, and I'm interested to learn. I focus on the international scene, and one of the topics of conversation I would like to have this evening with the audience is how the international scene and the pace of change and volatility in the international marketplace, how that would affect Alaska. I'd like to exchange some ideas with the audience, and of course you all are much more familiar with your situation inside the state than I would be. But I imagine that there are quite strong linkages, maybe even more so today, particularly for gas, than there was when the North Slope oil was first discovered.
We didn't hear early in the conversation between the governor and the legislature. We heard much more of this thing, which had to do with the fact that we were kind of told more or less by the oil companies that our tax structure in Alaska was not in line with international tax structures. And then I noticed that kind of faded into the background, and that was not the core of the argument as it progressed. Do you know, or will you be able to talk to the audience tonight about international tax structures?
Yeah, a little bit, little bit. I mean, your taxes are high by international standards, but I think even more important, or perhaps just as important as the actual tax rate, is the stability of the investment climate, how stable the terms are, because this is a long-term industry. It's an industry where you make a dollar of investment today and you hope to recoup that first dollar, you know, 10, 15 years from now rather than in the next few years. So stability of terms for investors who are going to commit tens of billions of dollars to major projects to understand that the terms that they go into a deal on is going to be the same terms as they come out of when they start producing the oil is really very, very important. So it's stability of terms as well as how competitive the terms are that you offer in this state compared to the other places that the same oil companies may be able to commit their money, because capital is limited, but also technical and human resources are limited as well. And the question is whether one of these major oil companies are going to spend $10 billion here versus in West Africa or former Soviet Union or Southeast Asia or somewhere else in the world. You don't live alone in a competitive environment. You have to be able to match or better the terms that other provide. And this is an important issue for Alaskans, I imagine, to understand and discuss.
It is. And one of the things that's not unique about Alaska, but it may be magnified slightly by our isolation, is the fact that we tend to be very internally focused. The state of Alaska is such a huge piece of land with so many really interesting and difficult problems to solve in delivery of various things. Our infrastructure is amazingly underdeveloped. In many ways, we're a first world nation overlaid on a third world society in many, many ways as far as our infrastructure in the bush. And that a lot of that has changed with the influx of money primarily from the oil industry. But I agree with you totally that somehow we have to begin or catch up with an international viewpoint. So I'm assuming that one of the ways that's going to happen is with your talk tonight. What other prescriptions would you have for us to try to get the international perspective? You're going to have to leave and won't
well,
be here.
I'm happy to come back.
Okay. But you may not be able to stay. So.
I was somewhat surprised, actually, in many ways on how remote and isolated the state is. I mean, I fly quite a bit from Washington to Asia, and then I often fly over Alaska as I land in Tokyo or beyond. And the other day, I was trying to find a way of getting from Alaska to the Philippines because of some scheduling for the following week that I was investigating whether that was a possibility or not. And I have to say, I was surprised at the...
Welcome to New York, Mr. Chow.
that the scarcity of international flights that would be available. I finally figured out maybe there was a way of going to Honolulu and stay a few days before transiting forward. That might be a pleasant way of spending the weekend.
That's how our Philippine population goes back to the island.
Is that right?
You know, Juneau has a very large Philippine population, and many of them visit their mother country.
Right.
One of the common ways of doing that is to fly from Hawaii.
But particularly as your oil and gas industry move more from oil to gas, I think that the across the Pacific, particularly Northeast Asia, is and what's developing in those places, particularly in China, mm-hmm. will become increasingly important to your state economically. And the more attention that people pay to it, the more they listen to national public radio, the better off everyone would be, I'm sure.
Well, certainly the Pacific Rim is a wonderful concept. I'm not sure that it's beyond the concept stage. We have trading partners, but we're not an independent nation, so some of our ability to trade with the Pacific Rim is limited by the fact that the federal government controls many of the things that we could do if we were a free economic agency or a national economic agency of our own. We are an oil barony only in name, not in reality. So,
well, your federal legislators have been quite active in the Asian Pacific arena. Both Senator Murkowski's have been active in the Asia Pacific subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. So I think they are right to be focusing more and more not only to the lower 48 but across the Pacific.
So, Mr. Chow, I believe you're speaking tonight at 5, and right. Your venue is our own TV studio downstairs.
I'm very much looking forward
to it. And I'm sure that there will be a pretty good crowd, because this is an extremely important issue, and I think Alaskans sense that it is an important issue for all of us here. So I hope you have a chance to visit our wonderful area here and get around a little bit. And I'm looking forward to the possibility of hearing from you this evening at KTLO Studios at 5 o'clock.
Thank you so much for coming in
and speaking with us. Petrowski is here to talk about the Postal Carrier Food Drive. Mark, what's going on?
Yes, this Saturday, May 12th, we will be having the 20th National Association of Letter Carrier Food Drive. And to participate in the food drive, all people have to do is put non-perishable food items in, on, or near their mailbox prior to their mail carrier coming to deliver the mail. And the mail carrier will pick up the food and take it to the local food banks. Last year, we collected a little over 700 pounds because it was a light year. We didn't get our promotion out on time and stuff. But this year, we're hoping to get back into the thousands. And the highest we've took since I've been doing it since 2005 is over 7,000 pounds. So we're really excited about doing it again this year. We're doing our job as well as also helping feed the homeless here and people that not even homeless, the people that need the food. You know, school's out during the summer months. Children are not getting their free lunch at school for Saturday, breakfast and lunch. And so families didn't have to feed their children except for one meal a day. But now since they're home during the summer, demand for food is a lot more needy. So the summer months is hard for the food banks to get replenished, during this time of year. So that's why the National Association of Letter Carriers started this food drive about 20 years ago. And it's been very across the nation, and it feeds the people locally in their community. The food goes right here in Juneau to feed the people that need it here in Juneau.
Mark, what if you have a post office box?
If you have a P.O. box, all you have to do is either take your donation when you go pick up your mail at the P.O. box and take it to the front counter, or you could take it to any of the local grocery stores. All of them are helping out by participating to help have we have a hamper at each grocery store. The A&P, Walmart, Safeway, Super Bear, and Fred Meyer's all have a hamper where you could just drop a donation. And if you do go to a store and shop there and you buy one item, get one free, you could always toss a free one in the hamper on your way out.
There you go.
I'm sure someone will appreciate that. So there's many ways you can donate. If you don't want to break your carrier's back, you could also carry it to the post office yourself and drop it off, and they'll be glad that you did. And all the food goes, like I said, to local food banks here in Juneau.
Good enough. Letter Carriers Food Drive all day Saturday.
All
put
day
the
Saturday.
Mail in the, put the food in the mailbox. It'll get picked up.
You don't have to put a stamp on it. We'll take it.
Good enough.
We'll take it.
Hey, Mark, thanks so much for telling us.
Thank you
Bye
for
now.
Having me.
13 minutes before 4 o'clock, and we're kind of running folks a little bit crowded today on the agenda, but here's our next guest. I'm not sure everybody knows who Dan DeRue is, but if you've ever walked through the City Museum and been suddenly startled by the fact that you are seeing Mount McKinley from a gondola, then you know who this painter is. Dan, I understand you're doing a show at the State Museum.
I am. Dan DeRue's History of Alaska from the early crossing of the Bering Land Bridge up to the present.
And whose paintings are you placing your pieces in?
Whose paintings? You mean from
which classical works? Your gig has been to take a classical work.
Titian, Tiepolo, Sargent, Michelangelo.
Do you ever feel
Vermeer.
The slightest bit sacrilegious?
No. This is artists have done this for millennium. Artists have taken bits from prehistory, from ever since forever. They've used other artists' work and developed them further, adapted them, and this is just the long tradition.
And so, how do you find the work that's going to frame your thought?
Well, I went through and made a list of the events that shaped Alaska, major things, and tried to develop a piece around each of those. I missed out on the pipeline. I couldn't really come up with one for the pipeline, and the earthquake I missed out on, but I've got a bunch of other highlights in there that are pretty good. The Seward's ice box is in here.
His actual ice box.
Yeah.
I didn't know that it had been preserved.
He used to make ice boxes. He had a whole manufacturing company back in Auburn, New York, that manufactured ice boxes.
And so, what did you place him in, Seward's ice box?
There's an ad from the Auburn Daily Register, or whatever the name of the Auburn paper is. An ad for Seward's ice boxes in there, and then there's his actual ice box, as deluxe model, I think it was.
So, how many paintings are in the show?
About 30 pieces. There's sculptures. They're not all paintings. There's photographs. There's artifacts. There's actual items, historical, true, real things that are in there. It's really going to blur the line for people. For tourists, they're going to come in, and some things are going to be believable, and some things are going to be kind of obviously not too believable. And then there's a lot that really ride the middle, the fence. So they're not going to know what's going on.
You actually have a piece or two hanging in the Smithsonian, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a piece. Well, it's probably in the racks. It's probably not actually out there for...
So we have to get into the back room.
Okay. Right.
What is it?
It's a mask painting.
Oh, okay. From the set of masks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are on your website. It's great fun to kind of sit there and go through them.
Oh, thanks.
Some of them have a great deal of humor in them. Some of them are really nice pieces.
I've got it. There's a totem in the museum show. I've carved a raven totem with a box of light. That's one of the first pieces that's in there. It's actually got a light, quite a wild light in it. And I've got a petroglyph, ancient stone carving in there. Some fun things.
As you're putting these pieces together in the studio, are you laughing most of the time?
A lot of the time.
So
I've had a really good couple of years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the show will be up, I think, through the end of May?
No, it's up for 5 months. It opens this Friday, the 11th. At 4:30 to 7, there's an opening, and then it runs all the way through the summer until mid-October.
Outstanding.
Yeah, so people won't have...
So everyone gets a crack at this. Including a lot of tourists who will come through.
It's really a great opportunity, and much thanks to the museum for having it. It's really a terrific opportunity.
And when they get back home, they'll tell their friends that, this is really weird history that Alaska has. Dan DeRue, opening at the State Museum, right next to KTOO, opens tomorrow this Saturday at 4:30. Friday at 4:30.
Friday at 4:30.
And folks are invited to the... is there a reception?
Yeah.
No. Okay.
Yeah,
so folks are invited to the reception, and then we have a lot of time clear into October to spend some time with Dan DeRue's paintings, which is always an entertaining experience.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much for coming down. Well, it's about 8 minutes before 4, and Nancy DeCherney, as always on Thursday, has dropped in to tell us about the arts scene in Juneau. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm really good. Let's put a little music behind us here so we kind of
We can hum along.
Yeah, come on, sort of hum along. What's coming up?
Well, it's a we're right in the throes of jazz and classics, of course, so that's pretty pretty busy. We've got tonight the Mad About Beethoven with the Avalon String Quartet over at Holy Trinity. Tomorrow is the Honey Drops concert over at Elizabeth Pradovich Hall, which is actually the old A&B Hall. The Blues Cruises are sold out, but they will do wait lists, I believe, if you get down to the dock. Sometimes people don't make it to the dock, and you could sneak on. But let's just go through it. Let's see. You just talked about the speech, the thing that the World Affairs Council has going on. Yeah. Hallelujah Girls tonight at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. This is the last weekend for this. It looks hilarious. You probably should go. I had the privilege of going to see Bigfoot and Other Lost Souls last weekend. Also, very funny. Must go. It's great singing, great acting, great dogs, all sorts of things. I mean, it's very amusing. So don't miss that. You have until May 27th, but again, you'll find yourself going, wait a minute, it's already gone. So do that. We've got the Dipsticks having their 12th annual classic and custom and antique car and cycle show over at Centennial Hall. That starts Friday at 4 p.m. It runs Saturday and I believe Sunday as well. And we just talked with Dan DeRue, so you know that on Friday night you could go over and visit with him. Tom Loker's up at the Tram. We have Jazz Licks at 6 o'clock at the Rookery with Barney McClure. It's part of Jazz and Classics, and that's a free event. We have you got Hallelujah Girls Bigfoot and the Honey Drops. Saturday is the Maritime Festival, and it's also the annual litter-free spring cleanup day. So you can go out at 8 a.m. and get up your yellow bag and do a little cleaning up and then go to the Maritime Festival. It's also your KTOO and KRNN spring auction, so you can shop and do these things at the same time for Mother's Day. That's right. It is also the Juno Convention Visitors Bureau Volunteer Walkabout Day. It is the plant sale, my favorite thing, out at the Safeway parking lot. That starts at 9. Everything will be gone by 9:05.
Sandy was here to tell us about that, and we warned everyone
yes,
to be
yeah,
there at
bring
9
your elbows
prompt.
Yeah. Nicely sharpened. There is a farmer and crafters market at 10 at the Airport Shopping Center. It's the first of the summer. There is a silent auction of some sort at the Nugget Mall and the car show, of course. And the Maritime Festival officially begins at 11, and I think it runs all afternoon. We're having our first annual Mini Cooper car show in the Jack at noon. It runs from noon to 4. We have some door prizes and fun, and we just test drove to see, make sure we could get the cars in there, and we can. So it's going to be fun. Drop into that while you're over at the Dipsticks place. There's a celebrity readathon and cakewalk. It's part of the Maritime Festival. It's at the downtown library at 2 o'clock. It's free. Come on down and read a little bit. As I mentioned, the Blues Cruises are out at the Stater Harbor, 5 o'clock and 9 p.m. You want to be there before then because they will launch the boats promptly at those times. So be there no later than 4:45 and 8:45. There's swing dancing at the Rookery at 6 p.m. There is a wine tasting at the Prospector also at 6 p.m. The Juno Dance Unlimited Spring Recital, Thunder Mountain High School. You can get tickets online or at the bookstores or over at the Jack. That's at 7, and also on Sunday you have the opportunity to do that. Spring is Singing, the Alaska Youth Choir Spring Recital at Northern Light United Church at 7 p.m. Again, you've got Hallelujah Girls, Girls on Guitar at the Rookery, Word to the Wise at 5 at Marlon Tini's. There's a little charge for that. You get it at the door. It's the prom night for Juno Douglas High School kids, so look out for those folks all dressed up. 9 o'clock, Tram Wrecks up at the over at the Island Pub. Sunday, it's Mother's Day, so hopefully on Saturday you took care of all of that. Also, the Alaska State Museum and the Juno Arts and Humanities Council are going to go to their summer hours on Sunday, so you have a longer opportunity to do that. There is a annual wildlife fundraising cruise. Leaves from the Allen Marine Dock, which is the one that's down by the ferry terminal, and the tickets are $40. You can get those at the sale office. It is, again, an opportunity to see the spring recital for Juno Dance Unlimited. Jazz and Classics, traditional family concert, which is free. It's at the university. It's 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoon. Real nice thing to do. I think they have refreshments. Then it's followed at 7 p.m. by Putting on the Ritz, which is out at the university. And again, you have the opportunity to see Bigfoot. There's a noon concert with the USA Marine Jazz Band Combo. That'll be at the SOB at noon, and that's free. Or at 5 o'clock, they're doing a live at 5 at the Jack, so you can do that. And then at 7 o'clock, they're offering a movie, Shostakovich, on the big screen over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. They'll have, a little discussion and all that sort of stuff. Tuesday's noon concert is with Barney McClure. And there's a movie at the Goldtown called Pink Smoke Over the Vatican. Tuesdays are the usual workshops that Jazz and Classics always offers. There's strings and piano and vocal, all kinds of things. You can sign up to actually participate or just listen in. And sometimes you learn a lot just by listening in. Mayfest starts
schedule
over
for those workshops is on the Juno Jazz and Classics website.
Yeah. And like I said, if you're auditing, you can kind of move from one to the other. Mayfest starts over in Petersburg. Those annual Little Norway celebrations begin on Tuesday. It actually starts on Thursday, but in Petersburg they like to start partying a little earlier, which is not bad, you know. Wednesday at 5 p.m., it's Duets at the Depot. Linda and Paul Rosenthal. It's at the Alaskan Brewing Depot downtown, and that's free. Out at the library at 5:30, it's an e-book open house, and at 7:30, Jazz Jam at the Lucky Lady with Barney McClure, and that is free. So you've got a busy week to get through here.
Quite a week.
I hope to see you at something or other.
Well, I certainly will try desperately to get out to something. Thank you so much, Nancy,
for
bringing us up on that. Well, you've been listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We translate our signal from 104.3 FM downtown to a number of translators in the area. K276AF is at 103.1, K269AO at 101.7, K201AM at 88.1, K220BT is 91.9.